So someone in your house wakes up at like 2 in the morning with that dreaded heavy cough.
Oh, or worse, the stomach bug.
Yeah, exactly, the stomach bug. And your instinct just immediately kicks in, right?
For sure. Total panic mode.
You grab a brightly colored spray bottle, maybe a huge roll of paper towels, and you just start furiously wiping down the kitchen counter and the bathroom sink.
Right, because you smell that artificial lemon scent
Yeah.
and you feel like you've done something proactive.
You really do. You feel like you're protecting the rest of the family. But what if I told you that you probably didn't kill a single virus?
Yeah, you basically just smeared it seamlessly across your entire kitchen.
Which is a horrifying thought, and that is exactly our mission on this deep dive.
It really is.
We are looking at the exact science of eradicating illness from your home. We're pulling directly from Public Health Ontario guidelines and also residential cleaning protocols used across the Greater Toronto Area.
Which are incredibly thorough, by the way.
They really are. We're going to look at the chemical reality of how illness actually spreads indoors because, you know, we really need to move past this idea of hygiene theater.
Hygiene theater is the perfect way to put it. It's such a universal human default to do exactly what you just described.
I mean, I do it all the time.
Right, we instinctively reach for what smells clean. If the kitchen smells like lemons or pine needles, we just feel safe.
But the viruses don't care about the lemon scent, do they?
Not even a little bit. Public health protocols don't care about scent either. They look entirely at chemical mechanisms.
Which makes sense.
There is a really stark clinical difference between physically wiping away, like breakfast crumbs, and actually stopping a chain of viral transmission in a household.
So the moment an illness enters your home, your normal weekend cleaning routine is just entirely obsolete.
Exactly. It's completely out the window.
Okay, so let's start with the absolute basics because, according to the source material, the terminology we use every day is actually setting us up to fail.
It really is. We are totally using the wrong words.
Yeah, we casually use words like cleaning and disinfecting as if they mean the exact same thing. But there are actually three distinct tiers of surface warfare here.
Three very different tiers.
Right. Cleaning, sanitizing, and disinfecting.
And those distinctions dictate the actual chemical reality of what is happening on your countertops.
So let's look at the baseline, which is simply cleaning.
Right, so cleaning is your standard soap and water or, generic all-purpose spray.
The stuff most of us use every day.
Exactly. Cleaning just removes visible dirt, grease, maybe some food residue. It is strictly for routine maintenance.
So you're basically just making things look nice.
Yeah, you are using friction and surfactants to physically lift grime off a surface, but you are not actively killing pathogens.
Wait, not at all.
Nope. You might wash some of them down the drain, but the viruses themselves survive the process perfectly fine.
Okay, so I'm just tidying up. That's tier one. Then we step up to the second tier, which is sanitizing.
Right. And the guidelines note that sanitizing reduces the amount of bacteria on a surface by 99.9%.
Which sounds amazing, honestly.
It does. It brings it down to a recognized public health safety level. We typically use this for food prep surfaces or children's items.
Often using those specific food-safe sanitizers. But wait, let me stop you right there.
Sure, go ahead.
If sanitizing kills 99.9% of bacteria, I mean, isn't that a total victory? Why do we even need another level for that tiny fraction of a percent?
It definitely sounds like enough until you understand the concept of an infectious dose.
An infectious dose.
Yeah. What's fascinating here is that an infectious dose is the exact number of viral or bacterial particles it takes to make a human being sick.
Okay, I'm tracking with you.
So let's say a surface has 1 million viral particles on it from, like, a single sneeze.
Gross, but okay.
Right. If a sanitizer kills 99.9% of them, you are still leaving 1,000 active infectious particles behind.
Oh, wow. I never thought about the math like that.
And for some illnesses, like certain stomach bugs, the infectious dose is incredibly low. It can be as low as 18 to 20 individual particles.
Only 20 particles to make you sick.
Exactly. So leaving 1,000 behind guarantees the next person who touches that counter is going to get infected.
That puts the math into a completely terrifying perspective.
It really changes how you see that 99.9% claim, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Which brings us to the top tier, like the heavy artillery, disinfecting.
Yes. Disinfecting is the only tier that is designed to completely destroy viruses and bacteria on contact.
So this is what you must use after an illness has been introduced to the home.
Right. We're talking about EPA registered or Health Canada approved disinfectants. Products like Lysol or properly concentrated bleach solutions.
Okay, so the way I'm visualizing this, and tell me if I'm off base here, cleaning is like sweeping the battlefield.
I like that.
Sanitizing is like putting up a perimeter fence to keep the enemy numbers manageable.
Sure.
But disinfecting is sending in the SWAT team to completely clear the building.
That is a brilliant analogy.
Right. So if you just use a standard all-purpose spray after the flu has swept through your house, you might remove the sticky juice spill that the virus is sitting on. But the virus itself is perfectly fine.
Yeah, you're literally just giving the virus a bath.
Giving it a bath. That is so gross.
Which is exactly why Public Health Ontario specifically mandates disinfecting to break the chain of illness.
You really have to deactivate the biological threat, not just relocate it to a shinier part of the counter.
Exactly. But here is the crazy part. Even when we grab the right product, you know, when we officially call in the SWAT team, we are still totally messing it up.
Wait, really? How?
The source points out a massive mistake almost everyone makes when applying these products. A mistake that completely neutralizes the chemicals.
Okay, I have to know what this is.
You were talking about dwell time.
Dwell time, it sounds like a real estate term.
It does. But it is easily the most misunderstood concept in household infection control. And ignoring it renders your expensive disinfectants totally useless.
So what exactly is dwell time?
The guidelines explicitly state that disinfectant wipes and sprays require a specific uninterrupted amount of time to actually kill viruses.
Like you just leave it there.
Yes. The surface must remain visibly wet for anywhere from 30 seconds to 4 minutes, depending on the specific label instructions.
Visibly wet for up to 4 minutes. But think about what most of us actually do.
Oh, I know. We spray the counter, we grab a paper towel, and we immediately wipe it completely dry.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me. When I do that, when I quickly spray and wipe down a counter right away, am I essentially just taking the germs on a joyride around the kitchen?
Yes. You are taking them on a very damp, very dangerous joyride.
Oh my gosh.
When you wipe immediately, the capillary action in the paper towel just sucks up the disinfectant before it can do its job.
So the chemical doesn't even have a chance to work.
Right. And then you just drag the surviving pathogens across the next square inch of the counter.
Think about the chemistry of contact time.
Okay, let's get into the chemistry. Viruses have structural defenses. They have protective lipid envelopes, which is basically a layer of fat, or they have tough protein shells.
And I'm guessing the chemicals need time to break through that armor.
Exactly. The active ingredients in your disinfectant, like quaternary ammonium compounds.
Whoa, quaternary what now? Let's break that down for a second.
Fair enough, fair enough. Quaternary ammonium compounds, or QAATs, as they are known in the cleaning industry, are a type of antimicrobial salt found in most household disinfectant sprays.
Okay, QAATs. Got it.
They work by binding to the cell membrane of a virus or bacteria and physically tearing it open.
Literally tearing it open.
Yes. And once they tear it open, they denature the proteins inside.
Denaturing proteins always sounds so abstract to me. I mean, it's basically like trying to uncook an egg, right?
Cook an egg.
Yeah, like you are permanently changing its physical structure so it can no longer function.
Yep.
Once an egg goes from clear to white in a frying pan, you can't reverse it. It's denatured.
Oh, that is a perfect analogy. Yes.
Yeah.
You are fundamentally uncooking the virus's internal machinery.
But that chemical reaction doesn't happen instantaneously.
No, it doesn't. It's like cooking a raw chicken. You can't just put a raw chicken in a 400-degree oven for 10 seconds and expect it to be fully cooked just because the oven is hot.
Right. The heat needs physical time to penetrate the meat.
Exactly. So the chemical needs physical time to penetrate the virus.
The golden rule, according to protocols, is basically spray, walk away, come back, then wipe.
Yes. You have to let the liquid sit there, visibly wet, and do the molecular heavy lifting.
What if it dries too fast?
If the liquid evaporates before the required dwell time on the label is up, you actually need to spray it again.
Wow. Spray, walk away, wipe. It is a complete paradigm shift for how we clean.
It really changes everything.
Okay, so we've got our SWAT team. We finally know how to deploy them effectively with the proper dwell time. Naturally, my first instinct is to take these products and march straight into the bedroom where the sick person is resting to, you know, sanitize their space.
Right. You want to help them out.
Exactly. But the residential protocols explicitly tell us that is a critical tactical error.
Scientifically, it is an absolute disaster.
A disaster.
Yes. The guidelines are very firm on this. Do not deep clean the sick room while the person is actively ill.
Which feels so counterintuitive. When someone is sick, you want to get in there, change the sheets, wipe the nightstand, make it fresh for them.
It totally comes from a place of deep care, but the physics of disease transmission work against you here.
How so?
When a person is actively coughing, sneezing, or even just breathing heavily with a respiratory virus, they are constantly shedding viral particles into the air.
Just constantly shedding them.
Yes. Mm. If you could see those respiratory droplets, it would look like a thick, invisible smoke hanging in the room.
Viral smoke. That is a deeply disturbing visual.
It is. And if you go into that room and start shaking out blankets, spraying chemicals, and aggressively wiping down furniture, all you are doing is stirring up that viral smoke.
Oh, because you're moving the air around.
Exactly. You are aerosolizing the particles, launching them higher into the air. They settle onto your clothes, your hair, your cleaning supplies.
And then I'm guessing you just carry it out with you.
Right. You walk out of the bedroom carrying that invisible smoke and spread it through the rest of the previously uninfected house.
So wait, I'm supposed to just leave them in a cloud of their own germs?
Yes, unfortunately. The reality is you cannot uninfect them. They're already sick.
That makes sense, but it's hard to accept.
I know. You wait until the person has completely recovered. Then, the very first thing you do before you touch a single wipe is ventilate the room.
Ventilate the room. So, open the windows.
Yes. You open the windows for at least 20 minutes. You have to physically dilute the air in that space using the physics of airflow to push the suspended respiratory droplets outside before you start working.
Okay, but what does this all mean for the caregiver? The sick person doesn't just stay in their bed for 5 days straight.
No, they usually don't.
They wander out, they go to the kitchen for water, they go to the bathroom, and the protocols highlight this. I'm supposed to ignore the den of illness, but obsessively wipe the TV remote.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, yes. While we ignore the sick room, we have to relentlessly target a specific hit list of high-touch surfaces in the communal areas every single day.
Because those communal items are the bridges between the sick person and the healthy people, right?
Exactly. The goal during an active illness isn't a spotless house. It is strictly stopping cross-contamination.
Right. You touch the contaminated refrigerator handle, then you rub your eye, and the virus has successfully crossed the bridge to a new host.
Yep. The source gives us a really specific hit list to target.
Let's hear the hit list.
Door handles, especially bathroom and bedroom doors. Light switches, faucet handles, the toilet flush and seat.
All the obvious ones.
Right. But also TV remotes, game controllers, phone and tablet screens, keyboard and mouse, the fridge handle, and stair banisters or handrails.
Basically anything a hand touches on autopilot.
Exactly. By disinfecting those specific transfer points daily and respecting the dwell time, of course, you are burning the bridges the virus needs to spread.
Okay. I love that. Burning the bridges. Let's trace the path of recovery now.
Sounds good.
The fever has finally broken. The patient is back on their feet. We've opened the windows in the sick room, and that viral smoke has been venting out for 20 minutes. Now it is time to execute the room-by-room reset.
Yes. Let's follow the path the sick person took through the house. Ground zero is the sick room itself.
So we start with the bed, right?
You strip and wash all the bedding at the highest temperature the fabric will allow.
Heat is important here.
Very. Thermodynamics plays a huge role here. High heat physically destroys viral structures. Wash the mattress protector, too.
And the hard surfaces.
Wipe down the hard surfaces, the nightstand, the windowsills, with your approved Health Canada-registered disinfectant.
Yeah.
And throw out used tissues and meds.
You know, the guidelines note a really specific detail about the trash bin here.
Oh, the trash bin is huge.
Yeah. Don't just pull the plastic bag out and throw it away. You have to wash the actual physical bin with a diluted bleach solution.
Because tissues miss the bag, or they get caught on the rim.
Yeah.
The bin itself is a massive contamination zone.
Gross. Okay, so we've done the bedroom. Now follow the patient's path out of the bedroom and into the bathroom.
The bathroom requires a complete top-to-bottom disinfection, especially after a stomach bug.
Right. The source mentions wiping the outside of the toilet bowl. I mean, I get cleaning the seat and the flush handle, but why the outside of the bowl? Nobody is touching that.
This comes down to the mechanics of the toilet plume.
The toilet plume. Just the phrase sounds awful.
It is pretty awful. When you flush a toilet, especially after someone has been ill, the cascading water creates a violent vortex.
Okay.
That turbulence actually aerosolizes water and biological waste, launching microscopic droplets up to several feet into the air.
Several feet? You're kidding.
Nope. That plume of droplets then slowly settles back down over the entire bathroom, including the lid, the seat, and the entire outside ceramic bowl.
Well, that's why the SWAT team is needed on the outside of the toilet. That makes me want to disinfect my entire bathroom immediately.
I know the feeling.
But here is another detail from the protocols I never even considered. Clean the bathroom door handle on both sides.
Yes. This is crucial.
I always think about the hallway side of the handle, the one you see when you walk past.
But the inside handle is actually the single most contaminated surface in the entire room.
Wait, really? Why?
Think about the sequence of events. The sick person uses the toilet or blows their nose. Their hands are highly contaminated at that exact moment.
Right.
What is the very last thing they touch right before they turn on the sink to wash their hands?
The inside door handle. Because they close the door for privacy.
Exactly. They contaminate that handle, wash their hands, and then touch it again with clean hands to leave.
Oh my gosh. So they're basically reinfecting themselves instantly.
Reinfecting themselves or just leaving the virus perfectly positioned for the next person who closes that door.
That is wild. Okay, so both sides of the handle, the faucet, and probably swap out the hand soap, right?
Yeah, replace the hand soap, or even better, add a hand sanitizer pump near the entry for a while.
Great tip. Now the patient moves to the kitchen for a cup of tea.
The kitchen is the ultimate communal transfer zone. We really need to disinfect any prep counters where they poured drinks or made toast.
Don't forget the refrigerator handle.
Yes, hit the fridge handle again, the cabinet pulls, and definitely the kettle or coffee maker handles.
What about their dishes? Do we need to boil them or something?
No, just wash any dishes or utensils used by the sick person separately or run them through a heavy hot cycle in the dishwasher.
The dishwasher handles it.
Oh, the dishwasher is actually a phenomenal decontaminator. And not just because of the hot water. Most people don't realize that dishwasher detergent is highly alkaline.
Alkaline meaning it has a high pH level, like the opposite of acidic.
Right. That high alkalinity physically breaks down chemical bonds. It causes a process called saponification.
Saponification. Word of the day.
It essentially melts the fatty lipid armor surrounding most respiratory viruses, basically tearing the cell walls apart.
So the combination of thermal heat and high pH alkalinity leaves pathogens completely neutralized.
Exactly. It's incredibly effective.
That is brilliant. Okay, so we've tracked the illness through the house, from the bedroom to the bathroom to the kitchen, and we've dismantled its bridges.
We have, but...
But the source material has a massive, glaring exception to everything we've just discussed, doesn't it?
It does. There is one illness that forces you to throw out the standard playbook entirely.
Norovirus, the stomach bug.
Norovirus is truly the final boss of household illnesses. It is in a class of its own when it comes to environmental survival and sheer resilience.
I was reading the Public Health Ontario data, and it notes that norovirus can survive on hard surfaces for up to 2 weeks.
Up to 2 weeks.
Wait, 2 weeks? A stomach bug can just hang out on a coffee maker handle for half a month.
It can. And this raises an important question about our assumptions. Because the reason why comes back to how the virus is physically built.
Okay, tell me how it's built.
We talked earlier about respiratory viruses, like the flu or colds, having that lipid envelope, that outer layer of fat.
Right.
Soap and standard cleaners destroy fat very easily. It's like washing a greasy frying pan with dish soap. The soap breaks the fat down instantly, and the virus dies.
Okay.
Norovirus does not have a fat layer.
It doesn't. So what protects it?
It has what is called a viral capsid. It is a densely woven, tightly packed shell made entirely of tough proteins.
So it's not fat, it's protein.
Right. It is, chemically speaking, an armored tank. Soap doesn't melt it. Alcohol doesn't penetrate it.
Wait, alcohol doesn't work either.
No. Most commercial all-purpose disinfectants that proudly claim to kill the flu will not put a dent in a norovirus capsid.
So my artificial lemon-scented spray is basically just rain bouncing off a tank.
Completely ineffective. If a stomach bug has run through your house, the public health guidelines state you need a product explicitly listed as effective against norovirus, or you need to mix a highly specific bleach solution.
And the math on this bleach solution is incredibly strict.
Extremely strict.
The gold standard recommended is 1,000 parts per million of chlorine. To make that at home, the guidelines say it translates to roughly 1 tablespoon of household bleach per liter of water.
That ratio is not just a casual cleaning tip from a blog. It is a non-negotiable scientific necessity.
Because of the tank.
Right. If your solution is too weak, say, just a splash of bleach in a bucket, the chlorine cannot oxidize and penetrate the armored capsid, and the norovirus survives.
What if I just pour a ton of bleach in to be safe?
If you made it too strong, you risk off-gassing toxic fumes, damaging your lungs and ruining your countertops without gaining any extra disinfecting power.
So you really have to follow the recipe.
You must mix it precisely, apply it, respect the dwell time, and let the chlorine chemically dismantle the tank.
It really puts into perspective how methodical you have to be to actually win this war.
It really does.
We aren't just wiping up crumbs. We are actively disrupting a biological chain of events using applied chemistry.
That's the perfect way to summarize it.
So let's do a rapid-fire recap of our mission today to make sure we've armed everyone properly.
Let's do it.
First, know your tiers. Cleaning sweeps the dirt. Sanitizing manages the numbers, but disinfecting brings in the SWAT team to actually kill the virus.
Right.
Second, respect the dwell time. Do not take your germs on a paper towel joyride around your kitchen.
Spray the surface, walk away, let it sit visibly wet for the required minutes, and then wipe. Uncook the egg.
Uncook the egg, exactly. Third, beware the viral smoke. Do not deep clean the sick room while the patient is actively coughing.
Wait until they recover. Ventilate the room for 20 minutes and rely on your daily hit list instead.
Right. The door handles, light switches, remotes. Burn the bridges to the healthy family members.
Burn the bridges.
And finally, respect the norovirus capsid. If it's a stomach bug, standard cleaners will just fail. You need that precise 1,000 parts per million bleach solution to crack the armor.
It fundamentally changes how you look at your physical environment, doesn't it?
It really does.
Once you understand the mechanisms, how the toilet plume settles, how the inside door handle harbors the highest viral load, how the alkaline detergent melts the lipid layers, you could systematically dismantle the threat.
It definitely changes how I look at my house. Like, I'm kind of terrified of my own bathroom right now.
It should.
Yeah.
And thinking about the sheer resilience of these viruses, especially that detail about the 2-week survival rate of norovirus, it leaves me with a thought I want you, the listener, to really ponder today.
Oh, lay it on us.
Think about that TV remote or that video game controller sitting on your coffee table right now.
Okay.
We have all experienced those moments where someone in the house suddenly comes down with a mysterious, vicious 24-hour bug seemingly out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Happens all the time. We always try to rationalize it.
Right. We blame something suspicious they ate for lunch, or we assume they bumped into someone sick at the grocery store. But considering what we've just learned about dwell time and capsids, it makes you wonder, how many times was that random out-of-nowhere sickness actually just a 2-week-old ghost of a previous illness?
Oh my gosh.
Sitting patiently on the back of a plastic remote control simply because someone sprayed it and wiped it immediately instead of walking away.
Wow. That is a deeply haunting thought. A 2-week-old ghost on the TV remote.
It really makes you think twice before you pick it up.
I am going to go mix some precise bleach solution and properly disinfect my electronics right now.
Probably a good idea.
Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive into the chemical reality of post-illness home sanitation. Stay safe, respect the dwell time, and we will see you on the next deep dive.